Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Tasmanian Devin here, and we're bringing it home today on this deep dive series. And we've been throwing out all kinds of words like modular and prefab and volumetric in a big way recently. And I know when Amy Marks is going to come up to the mic, words matter to her, right? And so we're going to go into some of this stuff and have a great conversation of all these different kinds of offsite construction manufacturing methods currently growing in the industry. So Autodesk calls this overall trend the industrialized construction revolution, who we are honored to go on this deep dive series journey with. So make sure you go back and check out the other episodes where we're talking with specialty subcontractors like HVAC, MEP, who are paving the way in the industrialized construction revolution by developing new manufacturing and design build approaches to projects. So rather than being each project with a blank sheet, we have heard their stories, how they're developing their offerings as products with repeatable manufacturing methods that can be taken and adapted into custom projects. So if you didn't go check out episode 1 with Fred Miesk of Rosendin and episode 2 with Bill Bullock from EASC, make sure you do that after we get this awesome fireside chat into your ears, brought to you by Autodesk Queen of Prefab, Amy Marks. Lock and load, tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
I'm a Clase Azul tequila girl, actually. So I like tequila over ice.
Oh, nice. And tell us about the favorite place you've traveled, Amy.
I'm actually a big fan of New Zealand. And I would say it's going to have to either be New Zealand or I love Thailand. So I like Koh Samui.
So is Koh Samui New Zealand?
It's Thailand. That one's okay. Thailand, but it's a Thai. Awesome. It's really,
so you know, I'm going to chat you right off the bat. You know how words matter, right? So
I know.
This abbreviation, and I mean that. I mean, well, what are we talking about here, right? I'm going to challenge you right off the bat.
I'm going to say Australasia is my favorite area to travel to.
Well, where's that?
That's like Australia, New Zealand, Asia, Pacific Islands. Like, I like that part of the world. That's sort of my favorite part of the world.
Awesome. Well, I'm a big fan of New Zealand. I've heard you talk about that, both of us, with a background of being involved in rugby. And right. With New Zealand, I did my honeymoon. I've talked about it passionately over the 200 plus episodes that I get to ask everybody about what makes them tick. And New Zealand is a special place for me as well. So give us one story from your travels.
Wow. I mean, I've been really blessed in order to travel the world through mostly work and also through playing rugby. I've done a lot of traveling, but, you know, I think the best stories I have through traveling is just meeting great people. I'm a big street food, like outdoor street market food eater. I think anything you can eat on a stick sitting on like a plastic chair is better than a fancy restaurant.
There you go. Out and about, girl, right?
Yeah, I'm not so fancy when I travel. I can be, and I like to do fancy things, but I think it's just as fun to like go out to the night markets and eat food on a stick, you know, and like pick out your food wherever it is.
There we go. Food on a stick. All right.
Yeah, my guys, actually, when I would travel with my team, if there was like a grandma cooking in an open fire on the side of the road and there are a bunch of construction guys lined up, I was like, stop the car. That's where we're having lunch. So whatever it was in any country, we couldn't even really know what it was. They were like, they wouldn't eat it, but I would be the one that was like trying to figure, and I would eat everything. So I eat anything and everything. I'm kind of one of those people when I travel.
Awesome. Well, what is your favorite hobby or interest outside these construction silos that we're honored to have you come in and tell your story and your background that we passionately call the art of construction?
You know, it's so funny. Anytime anybody asks me what kind of hobbies I have, I'm not sure I have any. Like, I'm a mom outside of, I have a 12-year-old daughter, Mackenzie, if you didn't see the show for Queen of Prefab. And then also, you know, I love to cook. I eat keto. So I have every kitchen gadget known to man. So I'm really just a mom, like when I'm not at work.
Hey, that's a great hobby. That is good stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, so Amy, tell us your story. And it's quite a story and your background in construction And how did you end up at Autodesk and what's your role there? And make sure, Tribe, go to the show notes and watch these videos that she's built, especially like we talked about in episode 2 with Bill Bullock, where she went to his facility and put this into, it's like 6 minutes, and it's just outstanding to really put yourself in these other spaces. And that's what Amy's doing. So talk to us about your kind of video series as well as you're guiding us to get going on this journey.
Sure. I actually grew up in construction. My family owns a general contracting company, and they were really big into construction management on Long Island in the New York area when people didn't really quite know what construction management was versus general contracting. So I grew up in the business, and I was very lucky to have an opportunity to buy a steel and concrete manufacturer really back early 2000s, and saw that there was a better way to build things. And this made a lot of sense to me. And I actually rose through the ranks of that company. It was a minority shareholder, but was the president of that company. And then moved on to open up Excite Modular, which was a consulting company, really the first of its kind in the world, where we were really helping big end users, big governments, big general contractors, all the stakeholders to optimize prefabrication through design for manufacturing and assembly methodologies. So I would get on the job site and they would say, like, wait, are you the architect? And I would say, no. Are you the owner's rep? And I would say, no. We're actually here as prefabrication consultants. And that terminology was unfamiliar to anybody because we honestly just made it up. And we were really helping to set the process to not just enable prefabrication, but to optimize it and to collaborate with really all the stakeholders. And so I did that for about 10 years. And at some point, Autodesk contacted me and said, hey, we have this strategy around prefabrication and industrialized construction. Can you come and listen to it? And honestly, I did. And I thought, wow, this is exciting if Autodesk is getting involved in the space, because what I recognized is that you really can't change this ecosystem from the bottom up. I was, you know, basically Jim Lynch, who's my manager now, my boss, said to me, like, I love what you're doing and I love your passion and no one has the passion like you do, but you're too small to make a difference, really. If you really want to change the world, you have to come and work with me. And he convinced me to do that. And I used to teach a lot of process, obviously, but what now I have at Autodesk is that I can attach tech to the process and make it really sticky. And I think that's what makes it so exciting. And also, I get to be neutral, right? Because we work with lots of different customers across the ecosystem. And because I'm at Autodesk now, it's just easier to be neutral and to make it better for everybody, to raise up the entirety of the ecosystem.
I love that, right? And so you were the queen of prefab before people even use the word prefab, right? And I love, as I've learned so much from when you present and talk, because you say the words matter, right? And because people are throwing all this stuff out there in all these different ways, right? And I tell the story on the art of construction is I grew up in the supply chain, right? So I've supplied products my whole career. So I've spent 20 years trying to figure out how they've always done it this way of supplying products. And so the art of construction really was born in 2014, the same way when you were saying, I can't do this myself, right? And I'm like, I need to build a platform and build a tribe that there's all these people pulling this stuff together when we talk a story. And that's where it kind of ties into today. I'm just so honored to be able to guiding this conversation through Autodesk, right? And I've told the story on the first two episodes where I didn't tell anybody. And I just went to Autodesk University a few years ago because I'm like, Devin, you have to practice what you preach. And what I mean by that is that when I go to International Builder Show, I've been going there for 20 years and I know IBS in and out, right? But you go to Green Builder, AIA, or Autodesk University. So I went to all these other conferences to say, if I'm going to break down these silos and put them together, I got to jump in and be a fish out of water. And it was amazing, this journey I went on. So I went to Autodesk University. I just went booth to booth to booth, and I would just pop into a class that I knew nothing about BIM 360 or any of this stuff, but I would just jump in and dive out. And it was amazing the language that in Colorado, I own a window and door company, and teaching someone how to speak window and door is this mess of history and legacy, right? And so that whole story I tell is to come to say, Autodesk has titled this deep dive series for both of our teams guiding this message together to say the industrialized constructions. What is industrialized construction and why this title and what's Autodesk doing to make this a reality?
Well, first, let me say I applaud you because I know what it's like to be a fish out of water. I mean, I'm a woman in high heels, usually walking around in a dress on stage. And they're like, did that blonde woman just tell me that I should be doing things differently? So I know what it's like to be a fish out of water. And I've been a fish out of water probably my whole life, for the record. So I think it's great to have diversity in thought, not just diversity in gender and, you know, and you know, diversity in our workforce. So it's good to be a fish out of water. That's a good thing. I think industrialized construction, the reason I really like the term in some ways is that it's really an overarching umbrella terminology. There's pros and cons to all kinds of words, right? And I think one of the big disservice, like the big disservice that's done in our industry and our ecosystem is that we're very confused and we're using the words, I would say, interchangeably and sometimes incorrectly. And so therefore, the education process is a lot more difficult. So I used to use the overarching terminology of modern methods of construction. But the first thing I would say the word modern, and it was as if I were old before the rest of it actually came out of my mouth, right? So it's like industrialized construction is really the application of manufacturing techniques to the built environment. And so the con of saying the word construction is that designers may think it doesn't really include them, but it does, and owners as well, and operators. So it's really applying manufacturing techniques to, you know, things like design and pre-construction, construction, manufacturing, assembly, and operating. So it's to the entirety of the built environment. And we have to learn from other industries that are more productive than us, right? So I don't think it's any secret. And we've all seen the charts. And I think we're all kind of tired of hearing about, you know, lagging productivity and like we're running out of skilled labor. We already know that. I think we are getting closer to digitizing. Most people are recognizing, especially through the pandemic, that you really do need to get off paper and you've got to get on the cloud and you've got to digitize. But it's not enough to digitize paper-based methods. You have to really think about how to digitize to be more efficient. So inclusive in industrialized construction, by the way, in that overarching principle, are a lot of things, right? So there are things like prefabrication is in there and all of the continuum of the pieces and parts. So things like advanced building products and single trade assemblies and multi-trade assemblies. And yes, volumetric modules, again, a continuum, not a hierarchy. But there are other things included in industrialized construction like process and technology enablers. So again, getting digitized, getting on the cloud, using design for manufacturing and assembly methodologies to enable and optimize prefabrication. The word offsite is always throws people off a little bit. And honestly, I feel like I'm to blame for that a bit because in the US, no one was really saying offsite when I started Xsite, my consultancy. But really these days, there's lots of prefabrication done on-site as well as off-site. So really when I hear the word off-site, I think they're just telling me it's location-specific prefabrication. And, you know, all of that combined with sort of, you know, the way in which we build these assemblies, things like automation and robotics, they all live in that house of what I like to call the house that industrialized construction built. So it's kind of complex, obviously. And I think we have to really start educating ourselves as to what the words really mean so that we can come to a definition that people understand and we can move forward and go onward and upward. I mean, I'm not one to debate the terminology. I think we have to more importantly change the behaviors that we're doing more so than the words, but I do like to make sure that we're all on the same page. And part of what I do is at Autodesk, there were a lot of questions you asked. So I'm trying to answer them all in a row, but that's basically the industrialized construction, you know, vernacular. And then my job at Autodesk is not only to inform Autodesk corporate strategy as well as the product strategy on how to enable the software to adjust to the shift towards industrialized construction that's been going on, but also to work with our customers and help them on their journey to enable and optimize all the pieces and parts that are within industrialized construction. So really to help customers and to help internally to make sure that everyone is prepared for this shift towards industrialized construction. And I'm sure you know that most people are, predicting that, you know, if you look at McKinsey, they're saying 45% of all of our our work is going to move towards industrialized construction in the next 15 years. So that's my job. I feel like I'm a translator, I'm a teacher, I'm an educator, I'm a pusher, I'm a challenger. I'm a learner. You know, I have to learn things, obviously, but we have to make this easier for our ecosystem. And we truly feel a responsibility to become a knowledge center for our customers and the ecosystem so they can get what they need and really start connecting the dots for people.
I love all that. And I have to tell a story of kind of this journey that I've been going on through the Art of Construction tribe. And so, you know, our mantra is to develop leaders of the tribe that are lifelong learners to build better buildings, for contractors and affiliates to grow their business. And I say that over and over again, and I keep thinking about that message, because shout out to Audrey Group Essex. So I re-listened and I have a whole bunch of notes from your presentation on her platform. And it goes back a couple years ago, and Audrey and I both live here in Denver, Colorado, and we're like, this modular thing is something. And the word modular, everybody knows that word modular, but everybody has this mantra or picture. And you, I totally agree with you. There's been so many tests and data and the car analogies and Katerra this and Marriott that and all this stuff that, right, we're ready to move forward on. And so Audrey and I said, you know what? Right out of college, I took this job and I realized really quick that looking back on it, I was spot on, is that I've been in supply channel my whole career, but I went to work for a modular company to sell their products. And that modular, I realized really quickly, they were just trying to train you to sell whatever they could buy the cheapest. And it's not about whatever can be the cheapest and the fastest. It's about how you can add the best value, right? And so I said, Audrey, I'm jaded of the word modular, and that's why words matter. So we did this whole thing. We went on, we did 20 podcasts together, had all these amazing leaders from the Ken Semlers to the Ted Benson Wood and all these people that have been lifelong learners in the art of construction with the word modular. And I thought I nailed it. We did all this stuff and we launched it as a separate podcast called System Build Lifestyle. And so you talk industrialized construction. I called it System Build Lifestyle and nobody listened to it. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? I said, you know what, Audrey, the Art of Construction tribe is a big movement. I think I may have done this wrong. Let's relaunch these as Art of Construction, and boom, they blew up. We used the word modular and we used all the crusty contractor language and it took off. And I learned a lot through that process to say, Amy, you're spot on when you say you're taking all these words that we may have pushed to the market that people may have not been ready for or didn't understand. So the word industrialized construction, I think, is great. So can you talk about the driving factors behind the need for the push towards industrialized construction?
Yeah, first, like you threw a lot of things out there, and I just have to say one thing. Words do matter, but also the examples that we use matter as well. And so, like, obviously, you know, I worked for a volumetric steel and concrete modular manufacturer for a long time. But one of the things I think is hurting us the most in the ecosystem is that we are constantly using the anomaly examples for prefabrication that are like 0.001% of what's going on. And that's hurting us. We have to stop doing that. That's why when people say modular, I make sure they mean volumetric boxes. They're not talking about the majority of the prefabrication that's going on right now, which is pieces and parts. And that's single and multi-trade assemblies that are being done by many of the, what you would consider traditional MEP or, you know, structural subcontractors that are out there, or even some of the general contractors that are self-performing. And that far exceeds the volumes of any of the names of the companies that you just threw out there. And not only does it far exceed the volume and the value, but they've also been doing it longer. They've been fabricating longer. And so actually, and my words are going to change. We don't have to get into it in this question, but I'm going to tell you what the future words look like. And they don't look like they look today, I don't think. But our words matter and our examples matter, right? So that's important, because if you want to say, where is this going? What are we doing? I don't believe, and if you read the reports that are out there, that everything is going towards volumetric modules. I don't think that's true. And I think as we continue to use these big examples of only volumetric modules, we're hurting ourselves. Not that volumetric modules are bad. I think they're fantastic for the right applications, but there's so much that's behind the walls and above the ceilings and underground and in places like, I love the guys at EAS. Obviously, they're doing lots of cool central utility plants and data centers, but they're doing a lot of the spaces that you don't necessarily see. And I think that's true of a lot of the MEP subcontractors. And they're really, they are the, hopefully the new, I coin them sort of like the new manufacturers. We need them. We need them to change from being subcontractors that fabricate into manufacturers. And you ask me why this is so important. I mean, there's lots of reasons. And I look to sustainability as why we really need to do this. And you might think, well, yes, she's going to talk about, you know, environmental sustainability. But really, I mean a more holistic look at sustainability from, yes, environmental sustainability. We, you know, 40% of what's in the land of our of the, in the landfills are construction waste. You know what I mean? There's so much waste going on in our ecosystem, not just physical waste, but also digital waste. John Turner from GAFCON loves that phrase. You know, there's so many things that are drawn even digitally or put together that then get chucked in the, you know, proverbial trash, and then we redraw them, right? So we've got to reduce waste, right? Then we really do need to do this for industry sustainability. And the reason I say that is we're not going to exist as an industry if we don't figure out how to do more with less, right? We need to bring in, you know, a diverse population into this industry and these the ecosystem of industries. So we need young people to want to understand how to work with tech. We need, you know, people of diverse populations to give us diversity in thought. And we need manufacturing techniques applied to construction to really draw in that talent. You know, if you look at some of the videos we did for Queen of Prefab, there's a moment where there's a 23-year-old gentleman running some automation equipment. And literally his words to me were, I said, how do you like doing this? He's like, yeah, I figured out how to, you know, tie my iPad in. And I said, how do you like doing this at this company? And he said, it's better than hanging drywall. And like, by the way, not that hanging drywall is bad because it's a great skill, but if you want a 23-year-old to come into the space, he wants to figure out how to use his smartphone and his iPad and run machinery, you know, and automation equipment. So we
One thing I just want to add into that is like, you have to hit the sexiness of the new generation, right? They're the digital age. They grew up as digitals, right?
Yes.
And I tell the story of my marketing director, Scott Hicken, who came out of the new journalism school at CU, and the guy's just amazing. He's like, well, Devin, it's because you're a digital immigrant and I'm a digital native. I'm like, stop. What the heck are you talking about? I'm a technology. He's like, well, yeah, you're pretty good, but I'm an immigrant, you know, you're an immigrant. You came into this. I'm native. And so we have to, that's their first language, right?
Right.
And now, dude, we were in a meeting the other day and he's sitting there training one of our new marketing people on the team. And we do a lot of, you know, our global megaphone to our local test labs here in Colorado. And that's kind of what I see you do on the Queen of Prefab, is you're going into these spaces and pulling up this story, right? And he's talking about it and he's just getting like, he's talking about design pressure ratings and all this stuff to market. I'm like, dude, Scott, you're speaking window and door, man. And you're like a window and door geek. And he's like, I am. You know, but the point of I get so passionate about this is that we have to hit them in the heart first of how they really pick, right?
No, it's so true. And so you have to have, you know, we need industry sustainability. We also need social sustainability. As we said, we've got to create some jobs in these communities where people want to come and work. They want to plan their, you know, their life around a factory environment where they can put a daycare, you know, located near their factories, and they can, you know, choose a gym that's near the factory they go to every day and go to college outside of where the factory is. If you're moving around in construction, it's very hard to have a structured lifestyle. And I think it creates a really great life, not just from a safety environment inside a factory and always working at one level, you know, not at heights ergonomically, but really just for the social sustainability of people's lives. And that's really going to create economic sustainability in those communities. So we have no choice but to do this really for sustainability. These buildings are becoming more and more complex in their design. And we've got to figure out how, you know, I love fashion. I don't know if you know that about me, but I'm like, we're basically prefabrication at the moment. We say snowflakes, you know, that's something I've been saying for a long time. But, you know, if you equate what a snowflake means to people that love fashion, it's like, we just basically make couture every single time, you know, and if you don't know what that means, all my gentlemen that are listening, it's that one dress that like J-Lo wears to the Grammys that costs millions of dollars that she wears once. We're basically making couture every day in construction when we talk about prefabrication at the moment, you know, for most people. But I truly do believe that you're not going to change the way in which we build if we only go to the people that have been in this space forever. You know, it's like we've got to bring in some new people, new blood, new concepts, diversity and thought in a way in which is going to enhance what we're doing. And I think that will ultimately change the way in which we're doing things and also the language and the reasoning we're doing it for the future.
So Amy, I want to talk a little bit more about why our specialty subcontractors, and you highlighted on it, and it's been a key thing to me, is about for 20 plus years, they've been the specialty manufacturers. Why are they poised to help and usher in the industrialized construction?
Well, be careful. I didn't say that they're manufacturers. They could be the new manufacturers. And I want to make that clear because I think there's a difference between fabricating the way we're doing it now as subcontractors and manufacturing. So I think that in and of itself is a spectrum, and we've got to make, you know, that known. But the when I say the specialty subcontractors, really the mechanical, electrical, plumbing subcontractors, the reason they have the best chance at bringing this education and bringing us into the new age of manufacturing and construction is they've been fabricating for a really long time, right? So they, on different varying levels, have been loosely termed fabricating up through some that are manufacturing pieces and parts. And that's really where the value, the money is in our construction projects, right? It's in all the heavy MEP solutions. So I think you have to be cautious about using the word manufacturing when you talk about what's going on right now with all of our subcontractors. But I think the MEP subcontractors that are fabricating are the ones that I'm really counting on to bring us up in the ecosystem when it comes to industrialized construction, because they've had fab shops for many years and they've been figuring out how to fabricate things for probably 2 to 3 decades, but they've been doing it almost in secret, right? They kind of take people's drawings and then they sort of redraw them for fabrication drawings in the best way they can to make the best fabrication solution. But then they send those drawings back and then those get, you know, what we call, you know, they coordinate those drawings, quote unquote, which basically means somebody who drew something that wasn't ready for fabrication sent that to the fabricator, who they then adjusted the best they could. And then they send them back and then they kind of go back and forth iteratively. That they have a lot of skill set in knowing how to make these things best. The challenge that we have is that because they're fabricating, right, and they're not productizing necessarily, they are doing it the best way they can, sort of making do with the drawings and the designs that they're getting, right? So in order for us to really make transformational change, we've got to do a couple of things. First, we need to move those products up front in the process. We need to understand the design for manufacturing and assembly principles that are based around those products. Like, if you think about the difference, think about something like a generator. Generators have things like cut sheets, and we understand the capacities of those, and we understand the sizes and how to assemble them and how they're inspected and what, you know, what insurance covers them. We know all kinds of things about the generator because the generator is a product, right? So if you look at any generator company, there might be a horsepower, you know, range of something like a 200 horsepower to 250 to 300. No architect or designer in the world asks one of the major manufacturers, can you make me a 217 and a half? That doesn't happen. We design around the products because we understand them as products. In order for us to get to the same place, first you need the fabricators, the guys that are making these heavy MEP embedded assemblies. We need them to tell us the best way to make it into a product. So they have to actually not just know all the fabrication skill set that they have now, but they need to know how to communicate that and to productize it. I think, you know, I've been saying the word productization, I don't know, maybe like for a couple of years. And I think people confuse productization with prefabrication. They're two totally different things. Right now, we talk a lot about prefabrication and DFMA, the enabling methodology to get optimized prefab. What's better than that is really productization, so that I know all the bells and whistles about that product. That's where we really need to stretch towards, because products give us certainty, and that gives us certainty in the data, and that allows us not just to have certainty of the data, but to follow that product through its life cycle, through all the phases of design, construction, and operate. And in order for us to get there, I truly, my money is really on the MEP and specialty subcontractors, like even the structural subcontractors, because first of all, that's where all the money is in lots of these heavy MEP jobs, you know, data centers, hospitals, manufacturing, industrial. That's where really we're learning the most, because that's where we're doing the most prefabrication. So I think we've got to rely on them, and we've got to have them to stop fabricating snowflakes. We need them to productize. And I need the owners, you know, and the architects to start asking for products and using products. So my money is truly, hopefully, on the specialty MEP subcontractors to start productizing, not just fabricating.
There's so much gold there. And I'm listening to you talking, man. I'm like, this is so fun for me, because you came from Excite, where you were your business, and then with Autodesk. I have my little window and door company in Colorado, but I'm one of 10 dealers on Anderson's Advisory Council. And what I mean by that is they're, you know, a huge company manufacturing windows and doors. And when you talk about productizing, you have to be able to take the people that have spent the 10,000 hours doing the work to be able to help take the products and put it together. So Autodesk has really helped. You've been coaching us to say, it really boils down to the specialty subcontractors are poised to usher in the IC revolution.
And I mean, there are others, by the way, just so you know, there are others. There are building product manufacturers that are vertically integrating into prefabricated product. Like, so it's not just them, you know, they have a great shot at it, and they're in our ecosystem. There are people in our ecosystem, I wouldn't say on the fringe, but that are just doing really, like, you know, if you think about like Strut or something like that, you know, we're putting a lot of assemblies together with Strut. What's stopping those Strut manufacturers from just creating the assembly? That happens as well. So correct. I think productization happens from a lot of different places, but if you truly want to see and you want to survive in this ecosystem as an MEP subcontractor, I believe you have to productize, because there will be pressures on them for others to take their spots. You know what I mean? So, but I think they have the craftsmanship and the knowledge and the skill set better than anybody else, because they understand the DFMA, that, you know, what makes it easy to manufacture for them, what makes it easier for them to assemble on site, that they have a great shot at doing this. But, you know, I think what's super important is that we think of this more as connected construction, right? Like, you've got to think of, where do all these players, whether it's the building product manufacturer, the specialty subcontractor that's now fabricating, the D, you know, as far as, you know, the designers, we really need this environment. Think about it. When you get a product, right, it's much easier to follow a product from, you know, design in Revit through the Autodesk Construction Cloud into operating that, right? And understanding, even from facility planning and capital management, you know, if you think about things like Origo or pipe and specifications, it's much easier to track a product than it is to track a process that's always different, right? So if you truly want to take advantage of the common data environment and get the most out of it, the more you can create certainty around products, the better it's going to be. And that's why I want to say it's not just about the specialty subcontractors. And by the way, that's our responsibility, which is why we're creating this connected platform, so that you can truly, you know, get from one side of it to the other with ease, you know, and we recognize that that's really a challenge, and we want to make that easier for people through the common data environment.
Yeah, I love that. So I kind of want to recap the first two episodes as we're putting this deep dive series all together. And if there's one thing I heard from EAS and Rosendin, it boils down to the systems and the culture, but yet they're feeding this bigger, and both of them talked organically in a good way about Autodesk. And I think that's kind of, so what's your recap of your different partners that you're now leading, Amy, through this Autodesk revolution?
Well, it truly is about partnership. So I think that's important to know. Not one company can get there on their own, period. I truly believe that. I don't care how big you are, what company you are, but we are this convergence of operate, design, construction, manufacture, the convergence, not just of those phases, but the convergence of companies, the convergence of industries, the convergence of product, all of that is happening. And in order to enable ease of, you know, building and designing these buildings, we truly have to act as, you know, a partner, as one company, even at Autodesk. You know, that's important to us. We are thinking about this world and thinking about what's really going on, which is convergence, right? And if you want to achieve the new possible, things that are different, things that you've never done before, you have to really understand convergence and what's going on. You're seeing phases like the ones we've been discussing converging. I don't think they're so linear anymore. We've got to think about it differently. We have to think about products differently. We have to think about process differently. You're seeing actually even the roles of some of the contractors and owners and architects are blurring, right? So you're seeing a convergence happen where lots of people are fabricating, they're playing different roles, they're doing different things. And at Autodesk, we understand that convergence, right? We see it happening. And we recognize that we have to provide a platform for this convergence that's different than what's going on now, right? So it's basically, you have to think about things almost as pathways with connective tissue of how do we get in this common data environment, this platform, how do we connect makers and designers? How do we connect owners in with all the other stakeholders so that we can be more predictive with our data, right? So that we can use data for certainty, not just in retrospect of what happened, but what can be. And I think that's super important. The only way we're gonna get there is to truly break down the silos that exist in our ecosystem and rethink what value means, right? We can't just keep paying people in silos on effort. We can't just keep automating processes that are inefficient, even if people pay for that. We have to stop doing that. And we have to think about the right way that we connect each other within this platform. And I think that's super important. And not one company, even Autodesk, can do it alone. We need to work with our owner partners, all the serial owners that are out there that want certainty in their build programs. We need to do that with architects that are trying to design more complex buildings and spend their time on the areas they want to work instead of the areas that they need to work and that we can help with, you know, machine learning and AI. We need to really connect, you know, builders that want to start fabricating and give them value at the front of the process and all of our, you know, all the way through our subcontractors. You'll be shocked. I mean, I'm sort of, you know, I'm a lean practitioner, right? And I love lean and I love lean manufacturing, but the answer can't always be move the person to the front of the process and that makes it better, right? So my big issue right now is that I'm turning 50 this year. I always say my age, most people know how old I am. I'm getting a little tired of just moving to the front of the process or for friends calling me in the industry, asking me who can fabricate certain things. That knowledge base is living now here at Autodesk. We have a network here of subcontractors and contractors that we can, you know, put you together with for fabrication. And it doesn't live in just my head. It needs to live in the software. It needs to live in the technology. The same thing for all the amazing fabricators out there that are productizing. They can productize, but if there's not a way to enable that product to get to the front of the process and that data to be functional for people to use, it's almost like a tree falling in a forest. So we take our partnership word very seriously here at Autodesk. And I truly believe we're doing some groundbreaking stuff here that has never been done before in working as a true partner to lots of the ecosystem players.
Awesome. So how do we break down the AOC silos and standardize these systems across the industry?
Well, I do think productization is a big key to that, right? So you've got to, it's funny, I always tell this story from when I did my first bathroom pod job. We used to make bathroom pods at one of my companies, right, that I owned. And I went out to the subcontractor, to the superintendent on the job, and I was like, what was the best thing about having bathroom pods on the job? And I was expecting him to say all these cool things like no punch list, and it was great and all that. But you know what he said back to me, which was always stuck with me, right? He said, the best thing about it was I got 7 a day. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, I got 7 a day and I could plan all my other work around the certainty that I knew I was getting 7 a day of these bathrooms that looked exactly alike. They were perfect. But yeah, but the 7 a day part was really important to me. And it made sense to me that we need some sort of certainty, right? To create, you know, structure out of chaos. I used to call it my chaos to order theory, right? It was like, we had all this chaos. You put one thing of order that was consistent throughout and all this chaos actually aligned itself around the thing that had order, right? That's what we need to do right now in the platform. We need to create order out of chaos. And the chaos is just process, right? We need to create products that will then create order. Once you also have products, it's going to unleash the capabilities especially when that product is backed up by data and tech, where you can use things like generative design and you can create digital twins and you can create that certainty because you have product, you have a digitized supply chain with product connected upfront in the process. So I think that's super important. If I could, again, there's lots of things we have to do, but I think so much of it becomes easier when you think about, you know, productization. And it's funny, now I'm the queen of prefab. And every time I speak on a panel, people are talking about prefabrication. And I'm not talking about prefab anymore. I'm talking about productization. So I don't know, I might need a new nickname at some point. But I think, you know, it's going to help us with so much of the issues we have with, you know, consistency and certainty in the data and analytics. And just that connecting all the stakeholders, that's going to be super important for it.
Yeah, one of my big passions on the art of construction, and our logo is a circle, right? And we're all trying to be open and working this together, right? So help us understand, how do we solve the problem of intellectual property, quote unquote, open data versus closed data, so that we can truly work together to improve our industry's systems and processes?
So I don't want to say this in a mean way, but like, it's kind of a dumb question, right? Don't take it that you asked a dumb question, but it's like, why do construction guys ask?
No one asks that question.
No, they ask it all the time. And it's sort of like, and I don't mean just men, but like, why do people ask me questions that have been solved in other industries all the time? Like, I don't know, they build airplanes and the pieces and parts of those airplanes have either patents or they don't, or whatever. It's like, it's not like it comes up there, right? Like, it doesn't come up in our computers. It's like, for some reason I blame the fact that we have a very insulated ecosystem within like construction industry. And like, it's like, I don't know, they've solved it everywhere else for every other thing that's built on this planet. Why do we think that somehow we can't solve that here? Like, I don't know, we have products right now that are used in construction that get spec'd every day, but I don't see them complaining that like all of a sudden their IP is like at risk, right? That's kind of silly. I think, I don't know. And I hate to be like, you know, so passionate about it, but it's like, I kind of think we have to stop thinking about what's stopping us from doing this and just think about what can help us actually get there and look at some other industries that's outside of our space. It's kind of like, you can't keep asking the construction guys how to be manufacturers. They don't know.
Enough.
You gotta ask some manufacturers.
Yeah, let's move like, on from that, right? And say that
it's... Yeah, I'm like, I feel like...
Hold on to this, right? So, you know, so one other question that we've been asking in all the other episodes, and I want to get your take on that, and let's be passionate about this, right? So some people fear that the building industry turns into standardized manufacturing processes, a la prefabrication with a product-led approach versus a project-centric approach. And I'm all about, you know, that's why I worked really hard on calling it the art of construction. I had all these people tell me, Devin, that you can't put that as your product and you can't do that because that's a name that you can't trademark. And I'm like, okay, fine. I don't really care what you say, because they're saying we'll lose the quote unquote art from the art of construction. And there won't be as much creativity and skilled artistry in the buildings anymore. So what do you say? And obviously I said, screw you all. I'm going to lead the tribe and I'm going to be the art of construction. What do you say to the people that may have that fear?
I mean, listen, if you're in first place in productivity and capabilities and skill set and technology of all the industries that are out there in the world, feel free to start talking like that. We're not. I always think change starts with dissatisfaction, right? Like if you don't think that it does, like come and talk to me, but nobody changes anything that's working unbelievably well, right? Like we all know that this is not working unbelievably well at the moment. Anytime you see the productivity charts versus other industries, anytime you see the technology integration numbers, you know, then when you're at the top of that list, you might want to ask the question. We don't have the right almost to ask that question at the moment in our space. I have to be honest. Like, see, you got me all fired up today. It's like, look, why does everything have to be custom? That's what's going on right now.
Going on that, right?
No, you really, honestly, like if you think about any other industry in the world, whether that's fashion, I just said there are stores like the Gap Gap that have standard sizes. And yeah, you can buy something less expensive at the Gap than you can when you buy, you know, high-end haute couture. You know what I mean? The same thing with like stereo systems. You can buy a stereo system that's like at Best Buy, and then you can have a custom guy come in and create a sound system for you that's unbelievable. It's not one or the other. You know what I mean? It's a combination of product and art. Product and craftsmanship. There are so many things. By the way, I'm going to be long gone before we think, before every single thing, and maybe it never is, and it probably won't ever be, is productized. Just like every other industry in the world, there are lots of things that can be productized that would make us more efficient and better. And by the way, there are lots of things I never want to see productized because I want to wear a custom couture gown to a ball that I have to go to. But then I know I'm going to pay. And then I know I'm going to do it like a snowflake and it's going to be a one of a kind. There's room for both. But there are so many things in our buildings that don't need to be snowflakes. I mean, I don't know one architect in the world that loves drawing fire stairs. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Like, there are plenty of, and by the way, that's why the MEP subcontractors have really risen to fabrication. There are places behind the wall, as I said before, below ground, above the ceilings, that most people don't even care about other than its performance, right? That's what we care. And I don't know. I'm so tired of us thinking like our ecosystem can't be like anybody else's. We're just fooling ourselves. That's, by the way, if you read one of my favorite books, is It Starts With One. And it's not a new book, but it's basically about change. Anybody who tells you in this ecosystem that we can't change, basically my belief is they don't want to change because they don't see what their future looks like when change happens. Now, you could keep going down that route, but you don't have to exist on this planet anymore because it is changing. It has changed. So you have to recognize that we are not any more special than any other industry on this planet. We're just slower right now to adopt, you know, efficient processes and digitization at the moment. And by the way, that's a good thing because you know why? We have the most to gain right now if we can do it. We have opportunity. You have to always look at every threat as an opportunity. There is tremendous opportunity right now for companies in this ecosystem to rise up and become the best of the best at what they do. It's like Blue Ocean Strategy, another one of my big favorite books. There's plenty of space for little, big, small, any company out there to take over, start doing industrialized construction methodology, start productizing and rise to the top. That's a good thing. There's lots of room for improvement. There's lots of, you know, paths that can be carved out. There's lots of great things that can happen. There's lots of new business models that haven't even been invented yet. There are lots of roles and skill sets for these guys coming and gals coming out of college that don't even have names yet that we need in this space that we can't even put words to yet. Think about that. What does the future look like for our ecosystem when people actually move to change as this is happening? It's exciting, right? And, you know, sometimes people think I'm lecturing them like I think it's the gender thing. They think I'm being like their mom and they've done something wrong. That's not it. I'm explaining to you like, this is so great. You have all this opportunity and like, you've got this great technology company here to support you. And that's really why I came here. You know, it's like, I want everyone to really reach their fullest potential with how I know and see the world has already changed and is rapidly changing every day. This is your time.
I get chills when I hear that because I think back of when I started episode one on the podcast and I did the first 50 myself. And you talk about the book you read, that's what it's all about, right? So now we have 200 of these podcasts, but now we have this global tribe and partnering with Autodesk. It just gives me chills to say that's how the movement starts, right? I could be like everyone else and just say, this is how supply channel is. Sonny Boy and Krusty Contractor tells me this is how it's always been done. And when I say I'm most of the time a disruptor and once in a while in a micro-influencer, that's what we mean, right?
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something. And I picked the word revolution on purpose. It wasn't an accident. Like, industrialized revolution is because there's an army coming. There are battalions that are, you know, joining. There are global battalions, you know, and groups that are really joining the industrialized revolution. I don't wake up any morning. This is a true story. I sleep, most friends, they know about me. I sleep with my phone. They all make fun of me. I literally sleep with my phone every day because I'm constantly connected. And I don't wake up any morning ever where a friend from this world or somebody I know in the space doesn't send me a picture, a video, a cool thing. And I call it my pretty prefab moment of the day, right? Like I wake up in the morning and somebody sends me something awesome. And I'm like, yes, that's why I'm getting out of bed today. If you don't think this is happening like that, I mean, I get literally texts and emails and WhatsApps, Instagram, all over the world every single morning of somebody showing me something that's super cool. So, and it's happening. Like we've got to start, you know, showing people the right examples, talking about it in the right language, supporting them in the right way to show them what's really happening and what can be done and how it should best be done, right? So I can tell you right now, this is an exciting time to be in our ecosystem. And I'm so glad I came here to Autodesk, and I'm so glad that I get to be a part of it and see and facilitate and learn and teach. Like this is of all times in the history of what we're doing, this is it right now.
Oh, so good. And I'm so honored to be able to share your story through Autodesk, right? So in closing, a couple questions we always ask that we love and we talk about at the Art of Construction platform. We're passionate about connecting the right construction technologies to the right handshakes, right? And blending all these and actually truly breaking down these silos. So what's your take when I ask you, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Really, for me, that's why I came to Autodesk. So, you know, I've learned very early on, you can't change people's behavior so easily. You can't change what they know how to do and tell them they have to do it in a different way all at the same time. You know, I came to Autodesk because of our portfolio of products, the design software, the construction software, the manufacturing software, now the owner software we have with Origo and, you know, Pipe that we just picked up and Bridget that we're investing in. I mean, we really truly have the foundational pieces that you need in order to connect the dots for industrialized construction. So it's not just, believe me, there's no hero product. There's no one product that's going to rule them all. There's no one ring to rule them all like Lord of the Rings. Because this is across the entirety of the life cycle from start to finish. We truly have to start utilizing the products in the portfolio across those phases. And they are connected. It's a platform, right? They have a common data environment, but they are connected in this platform. And platform doesn't mean just our products. It means using technology that integrates with our products that isn't even ours. So partners, even competitors' products, products that you're using out there every day. Because industrialized construction, if I can tell you one thing about tech, and listen, this is the super most important thing I'm going to tell you. It's not about one product. It's going to be about the connectedness, the connective tissue, and picking a platform that has the functionality with the most products that are going to get you where you want to go from start to finish that enable ease of that connectedness, right? Like that's super important. They're not going to buy. If anybody comes to you and says, I have the one thing that's going to make this possible for you, and it's like one little sliver of the connective tissue, it's not it, right? Just make sure you recognize this is about platform. This is about the connected construction, connecting it to design, connecting it to manufacturing, connecting it to the owner's needs. And really, that's why I came here. I needed to come to a place that had the majority of the stack so that I could make it easier to connect in my lifetime, right? But for that, it's just too hard. And so I think that's one of the things that we love with our partners is that we're learning from them about the best practices where they're connecting our software with others, software that's out there. And we truly want to be that enabler, that platform that makes this easier.
And you may have already said it, but I have to put it out there as the one thing we always ask when we get influencers into Studio Art of Construction. And as the queen of industrialized construction, what is the one thing you want to leave the Art of Construction tribe, its contractors and its affiliates, to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
I mean, I've already talked a lot about productization, so you know how I feel about that. But I'll leave you with this. I could tell you everything to do. I used to say I could give you my mom's recipe for lasagna, but your mom can't make lasagna like my mom, right? Actually, I make better lasagna now. I'll just point that out. But the reason that is I could tell you all the pieces and parts, but you know, I always say it's not hard to prefabricate a pipe rack. It's hard to get a culture, leadership, process, and technology that enable you to you know, make a prefabricated pipe rack, right? So it's a lot about that. It's that secret sauce, that the way my mom would pick the tomatoes out, or the way that I actually like cut them, or, you know, it's like that secret sauce of culture and strategy and technology. And you, that really comes from leadership. So I want to impress upon you that I could teach you how to do all the things that you need to do, but unless you truly have that at your company, an openness to learn, a culture that allows for learning, truly understanding how you want to strategically do this, you might be dead in the water. So I always say, like, look at the leadership and our behaviors and what we're trying to reinforce first. That's the one thing I would leave you with, that it's not hard to prefabricate pipe. It's hard to create a culture, leadership and process and technology to prefabricate pipe.
Outstanding. Amy, thank you so much for coming in and telling us your story.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. You got me all fired up today.
Awesome. Cheers. Art of Construction Tribe. Yes, there are places for snowflakes, but not always, right? The AOC is so honored to be part of the Autodesk IC revolution. We look forward to working with the lifelong learners of the art of construction and break down these silos with the Autodesk tools. I love how Amy talked about how Autodesk, who is the 800-pound gorilla in the industry, they talk about how they can't do it themselves. It's about you, Art of Construction. It's about our partnership. It's about us all working together in those relationships. Make sure you go out and watch her video series. It's so well done, titled The Queen of Prefab. But I think we're moving into this queen of industrialized construction, because I'm learning so much about what she's talking about, right? So if I lead you as this, I say the AOC plus Autodesk with IC, man, what a powerful network we're building. And we're all about here taking and building order out of chaos. What an honor to lead this journey with Autodesk, with getting in the weeds with super cool partners like EAS and Rosendin, bringing it all with Amy together and the team. So make sure you go check out this whole story, because if you're not on this bus, you're going to be left behind. Go out there and crush it, tribe. Thanks for listening.